You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend.
So, Tracy, you missed the days. You weren't there when we were doing stuff with Google Hangouts, and that was our platform for the longest time. And because we had the video, because we could see each other.
Right.
And that just kind of gave us better visual cues when we were doing these recordings. But it also allowed me the opportunity to have lots of toys on my desk that I could use to distract our guests.
Yeah.
And I haven't done that in a long time, but I'm thinking about bringing it back now that Zencastr has the video.
I mean, it's a look. It would really work there, you know, and you could, if you wanted to get, I don't know, kind of like intensive geek screening and things in place, you could turn it into some sort of quiz, like which pop figure is this? Yeah, that's Batman. That's
it
Batman,
made for great way, radio. I mean, it really did, because John would be cracking up at, you know, me bringing up all these pop figures and different things, and people listening had no idea. Our guest, you know, just trying to be quiet because they're like, well, you haven't introduced me yet, so am I supposed to speak? Am I not supposed to? Can I laugh? Can I not laugh? What should I be doing?
This is that sort of moment where Patrick is button pushing. So we're really happy to welcome Nino Cipri here with us. So if you feel like, wait a minute, no, Nino Cipri, I've been hearing that name a lot lately. It's because you have. Nino has been nominated for all the things. Their novella Finna, which came out in February of 2020, the lost year, the year of darkness. And in a lot of ways, I think is, I don't know, it's a book that like super duper taps the feeling of 2020. Like, I am trapped in a world of furniture that wants to eat me. And that seems legit. So Nino, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me. Thank you for trying to distract me with various Funko Pop figurines. I appreciated that.
The only ones I have here on my desk are Batman and Robin. So
I see.
Now I don't have
any pop figurines, but what I do have is, and maybe I'll make use of this, is a goat that my older sibling.
Is that the screaming goat?
It is.
He is the screaming goat.
I'm in the middle of like revising a novel and wedding planning while you're talking to me right now. So Leah really knew that like I would every so often I would just need to press it and just
See, the only other thing I have sitting here in the recording studio right now is my cell phone holder, which is a Vader. And he basically has his hands out and your phone sits on him. And he just kind of holds it in place, which is kind of cool. And then you can, if you want to, you can also run your charger through him. But that's like all I've got. Oh, now Tracy's bringing her goat. This is good radio right here, folks.
This is how we know that Nino is on the right podcast, because I went silent there for a while, which is, as you know, listeners, very atypical for me because I'm always talking, because I too have a screaming goat that was about 3 feet away from where I was seated. So, what more could you ask for, people? You've got three idiots and they're two screaming goats, which sounds like a weird... Is this like a three men and a baby sort of reboot that we're getting to here? I don't know. Could be a thing.
Well, now I feel left out because I don't have a screaming goat.
It's fine.
You can just scream. Just scream.
Yeah. The screaming goat was inside of you all along, Patrick. It was just, all of us are our own screaming goats.
The screaming is coming from inside the house.
So, of course we've
gone
to screaming
goats. Now that I've derailed everything.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that exactly is a derailing, because like there's a lot of, I think, deep existential scream level horror that's exuding out of the Nino Cipri verse. I think there's...
Yeah. That sounds correct. As far as like a blurb I might use on like a future book, like a lot of existential screaming is factual and descriptive.
Okay, here's where the dare comes in. I dare you to put a blurb on a future book that just says, ah, and the quote is screaming goat.
I mean, if I can get a goat to scream in reference, otherwise I just feel like it's kind of false advertising. So
yeah, it's true.
Look
like
for
if
me.
You show the manuscript to a goat, and it screams. Yeah.
I feel like I can't like coerce a scream out of a goat. because it would be both unethical and probably dangerous to my health. I don't see that going well for me. Like, trying to get a goat to scream.
And you still don't think I've derailed things, Tracy? I don't know.
No, I really don't. So you
did try to bring it back. I appreciate that.
No, Patrick keeps forgetting that I'm used to dealing with anywhere from like 20 to 40 teenagers at any given time, most of whom don't want anything to do with being in my presence. And so like hurting cats with a rhetorical taser is sort of where I live, bro. Like, come at me. I can handle this. So
challenge accepted.
Oh, indeed. So yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm overstating the case though when I said that like your name is everywhere now with as many. So okay, let me keep track. It's okay. Nebula nominated.
It is.
Hugo nominated.
It is.
Locust nominated.
I guess
we're gonna wait for.
The Locust it was long listed. I don't know if it made the short list. I've been in a fugue state of wedding planning and editing.
It's very much a thing. And it's very much a thing where the sequel to Finna came out last week on Tuesday. So that's last week relative to when we're recording this, Defect. And so I think that I don't know, for me what makes this type of horror that you're writing, because it is kind of a type of horror. It's horror, it's fantasy, it's science.
I think I've called it like horror adjacent. Like
if
you're really, really sensitive to horror, it might make you a little at times. Yeah.
I dig how it kind of connects to this uncanny feeling that we get in spaces that we otherwise take for granted. Mm-hmm. And we just sort of like move through. Okay, so background here, folks. Finna and Defect both have as their background piece, not IKEA, but sort of IKEA, big box furniture and home goods store called Littenvarld. And Littenvarld has a recurring issue that is known to some of its employees and becomes an issue in both of these novellas, but in different ways, of holes, as it were, in reality, routinely opening up between its different showrooms. If you've ever been in IKEA before and you move from like showroom A to showroom B and like, here's how you can barely live in 300 square feet and all this sort of stuff, they're each set up to sort of showcase different aesthetics and the sort of idea that like the twisty turniness of things that don't match being forced to live so close together sort of opens up gaps in our reality. Mm-hmm. And that things either come through them to us or that we end up getting trapped in them in other places.
Yeah. Like IKEA and just sort of like any kind of like big box store, it feels very liminal anyway. Like it feels like you could just sort of like accidentally fall through a wormhole. And I just, you know, using the power of speculative fiction, I was just like, yeah, actually, what if that happened? What if I could just get like, you know, accidentally take a wrong turn and then I'm in, I accidentally go through a, like into a portal fantasy. It was just like a really fun idea to play with. A friend of mine, I can't actually take full credit for it. Like another friend of mine actually like gave me the idea of wormholes in IKEA leading to other IKEAs. It's correct. It's entirely correct. Like I'm not the first person to think this. But yeah, I just sort of took that and ran with it. And it was an idea that I had been like thinking about for a long time, this idea of like getting disoriented and like the disorientation is like the sort of portal to another place rather than like finding a doorway. I don't remember where I was going with that, but that's what happened.
Well, I, as someone who has gotten lost in IKEA, I can totally see the premise. Because I've often wondered how do you get, it's like you'll see another section over there and you can't figure out how to get there. So obviously the only way to get from here to there is a wormhole.
Like the only way out is through is sort of the feeling of like both suffering and chopping at IKEA. Like you cannot skip anything. You have to go all the way through it until the end.
And wasn't this a pick of yours, Tracy, not too long ago? Didn't you pick this?
It was. Yeah, it was one of my picks of the week. Gosh, I can't remember, but it's been a a couple months, probably.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it hit me in just the right place as a reader that I ended up deciding to command the powers that be at my school to order 100 copies of it and add it to the reading list for one of my classes. And so a bunch of my students just read it, and a bunch of my colleague students read it recently, and actually had the chance to have Nino come and talk to them about their experience reading it and sort of all things in between with the writing experience and whatnot. So that was super fun.
Yeah.
You know, the whole idea of IKEA as this, the only way out is through experience. I remember living that like painfully vividly in August of last year, because in August of last year, it was when my kids' school, my own bio kids' school, had finally kind of pulled the trigger on saying, what is it going to look like for us to go back to school? Spoiler alert, we're not exactly going back. It's going to be remote for a while. And suddenly everybody was like, oh shit, the kind of, I'm just going to have the kid working at the kitchen table on a laptop for a couple of weeks that we were doing at the end of the spring is not sustainable for an entire semester or maybe even a whole school year. And so everybody, there's actually, the town I live in has an IKEA. It was built just a few years ago. So it's one of the things in the town. And,
oh wait, you're like in the Chicago suburbs, right?
Yeah, I'm in Bolingbrook, which is, there's two Chicago ones. There's Schaumburg area and Bolingbrook. So that's,
I was thinking of the Schaumburg one.
And ironically, she doesn't bowl, so.
No, that's a thing. That one was for you, Joe.
That was for Joe.
Cannoli Joe, if you're listening. Yep. That joke was for you.
Yes, it was.
What an excellent nickname, Cannoli Joe.
I can't take any credit for that. That way predates me. Way.
That was all me, yeah.
But anyway, everybody was going to IKEA to get like cheap flat pack office furniture to like panic build a home office in the corner of their kid's bedroom or like in a wherever they could, you know. And so we went on this quest trying to find something that would work in my son's room, and it was a nightmare because they had pieces X and Y but not Z and Q and R or whatever, and the only way to get the pieces that we wanted would be to go to IKEA 2 hours before they open. This is like the lamest waiting for the concert to open experience. Waiting at social distance with masks on in 80 degree odd weather at the start of August. And we had to go every day for a week in order to pick up a different piece. Because if we didn't come to pick it up at a certain time, it would get sucked back into the vortex. But you couldn't just like, when you finally were let into the building, when they opened the floodgates and all the humans went rushing in at the same time, you couldn't just go to the place. No. You had to navigate the labyrinth. They made you walk through the entire first floor before you could actually go to the service desk that was holding your items. And there's, you know, it was this continuous experience of being forced to revisit this disorienting, uncanny environment for no reason other than they were sort of hoping that the more times we were forced through it, we would come with more awkward arm loads. Like, it's very important that I have more corks to keep dishes from burning tables. So I just sort of picked those up. And also I came here for something. Oh, meatballs. You know, and just that it becomes, it's this really interesting, like, how do we turn your time into a commodity as a shopper? Uh-huh. Like, how do we make you spend as much time here as possible so that you almost feel like you have to buy something else to make it worth it? Because God damn it, if I leave here with like an Allen wrench and a few of these fucking widgets, I'm going to scream. Mm-hmm. So fine, I'm getting some cinnamon rolls too. Mm-hmm. Or whatever.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because it's not like chaotic, like a flea market might be chaotic, or like a rummage sale, like that you go to in the basement of a church or something like that. It is all very laid out, like for particular purposes, like that it has like these like weird little oases where you just like find yourself back in the food court and you're just like, oh, thank God, I really do need some of them. Those meatballs or like the little like 99-cent ice cream cone or whatever, just to get through the rest of this. Yeah. And I have a lot of experience working at terrible jobs, like working in like weird environments, like, and also working for like weird labyrinthine, like bureaucratic messes. Like I was a graduate instructor for 3 years while I was in my MFA. So like navigating like huge bureaucracies of like higher academia is pretty familiar. It's just like, it exists to try to get you lost. And I just liked that idea so much while also hating it so much, like, you know, in my personal life, but like, you know, working at it from a fiction angle was really fun and really interesting.
Well, and the reason I mentioned that Tracy had picked it is because this is not the first time our listeners have heard about your stuff.
Oh.
So she's been talking about it quite a bit.
Okay.
So I think you definitely have a fan in Tracy.
Thank you, Tracy.
But I do. Patrick knows that I tend to hard sell. Yeah.
That's fine. I appreciate it. My royalty statement appreciates it. Like,
you mean your royalty statement next quarter?
Yes. Yeah, I guess so.
You know, they'll be married then, and there'll be some things that didn't come in from the registry, and they, you know, you need to patch those holes. So
nobody has gotten me a stand mixer. I'm a little sad about it. That's fine.
Okay. So the ultimate kind of meta thing would be if the wedding registry was actually at IKEA.
I don't actually care for. I don't care for IKEA furniture that much. I do like their fold-out couches. Those are good. Everything else I really prefer in my personal aesthetic. And I just had to like go through this because like for the first time in my entire life, I'm living with only one other person rather than like with anywhere between like two to I think the most roommates I ever had was like 11 at one point.
A gerbil pile of humans.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. And like in a very ancient three-story co-op. So I had to like go through and just be like, what do I want for furniture rather than just like, what have I inherited from like the eight people who lived here before I did? Or like, what can I pick up off the street corner because I have no money? So I had to like go through this whole thing of just like, what are my aesthetics? And it really sent me into like a whole tailspin for a little while. This was in like last April when Nibs and I were like preparing to move. And she was just like, what do you think about this? Like, decorative wall hanging or this couch or this lamp. And I was just like, I don't know. Oh God. I don't know. Like
I've never been allowed to have an opinion before.
My style is hand-me-down.
Exactly. It was really, really weird. I was just talking to a friend of mine who has been who's basically been like nomadic for like almost the entire pandemic. Like he was sharing an apartment with other people and he had to leave because he has a pre-existing condition that would like, you know, if he got COVID from one of his roommates who could not stop working, was an essential worker, what the hell was he going to do? So he just lived in other people's houses for most of the entire year. And I was like, do you want to see the like bullet point list of like weird like items and then also feelings that I had? And I sent that to him. Because a lot of it was like... like sorting through like, oh, you know, this style of furniture reminds me of when I was, you know, 25 and cleaning rich people's houses for a living for like $10 an hour. And I found out that one of my coworkers was making $2 more an hour. Like a long like series of like weird things that I had never actually considered before when I was just like, I don't really like that, you know, that poster.
Yeah.
See, for me, the only thing I've ever purchased from IKEA are bookshelves.
Yeah.
Like their bookshelves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, over the course of my life, I've always had a lot of books and I've moved cross country now, like three times mm-hmm. and all my books have come with me and this is why friends will no longer help me move.
Yeah. I just helped a friend move who made the mistake of like, I'm going to put all of my books in like one of these huge boxes. And I was like, you can carry that
down
the stairs.
Oh,
that's a rookie mistake right there.
I don't know anything about that. I don't know a damn thing about that. That's completely foreign to me.
Narrator that voice, his chiropractic history says otherwise.
I feel like that's a mistake you only make once. And like you either break your spine or you learn.
Right.
The first time I had to move cross country. So I'm moving from California to Tennessee. So you want to talk about culture shock. Number one, that was a huge culture shock. But anyway, so I don't have a lot of money and I have to move. And so I go looking for boxes and no one has boxes. So I end up at the U-Haul store actually to buy boxes. And I'm looking at the different sizes and I'm like, well, I can buy the big boxes. And I can just get like two or three of those instead of 100 of these little ones. And so that's what I did. And then, but the fun part was, then I put it all in storage and I moved cross country. And then my uncle had to go get it because he was going to bring it to me. Oh, and then he's the one that's calling me and he's like, you're out of your goddamn mind. But anyway, so bookcases have always been a thing for me. And I've always had the cheap ones. Like I would go, I remember back in the day, I went to Kmart and I bought, you know, the $20 bookcases. And then at one point I upgraded with sarcastic air quotes to Walmart $20 bookcases. And then I remember splurging for the $30 bookcase at Target.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And all of them have the same thing in common. They're all complete garbage. They fall apart really easy. They break really easy. They're terrible. And I've got three of them in here that you guys can't see, mm-hmm. just stacked full of crap. I've got four or five more on the wall over there. But then upstairs is where I put the nice ones that I bought from IKEA. Because mm-hmm. theirs are a little bit sturdier. They are a little bit sturdier. They're a little bit nicer. You pay a little bit more for them.
It's the company bookcases right there.
Yeah, like those are the ones.
Those fancy Eaton table.
Yeah. all the books that I'm trying to show off are on those. It's like, yeah, I read that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep, yeah. I read that one too. Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
I read 15 pages of this in a college class, Hugo Awards and I never opened it again.
This is my trophy copy of Camus. Mm-hmm. you know, it's like the whole discussion about aesthetics is so funny to me because although I have never had like the gerbil pile of roommate situation that you described, Nino, I have like shared apartments with different people, lived at different places, and, you know, done the whole like just married, broke, no joke, you know, how do we furnish a house thing, and all of that sort of stuff. And I don't know that I have a discernible aesthetic either. And like when I look at what it takes to like make a room and like design a space with a very focused, intentional aesthetic, if you're just looking to do it with the power of a credit card and just like doing it all at once,
mm-hmm.
it's so ridiculously intimidating to me that I'm just like, I'm oh no. Mm-hmm. And this is the garage sale weekend in my suburban neighborhood. And the garage sale weekend is the weekend that the neighborhood puts up for a permit to the whole town so that you don't have to do it individually. And like anybody who wants to do a garage sale, it's like go off. And so mm-hmm. if I were to walk out my front door right now, this weekend, my neighborhood looks like a bazaar because it's just like, and it's, I don't need anything right now, but there is this sort of sense of like, but I could take $10 uh-huh. and I could go down that street and oh, the things I could find.
For $10. It is such a temptation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I always preferred like garage sales and rummage sales and things like that to like shop. Like I can't shop online. I have like a really weirdly bad track record for trying to buy anything online. Like can't buy things on Etsy. They just go to a different address, like in a different state. Don't know why, but
okay.
I truly don't know. It's like, it's a weird curse that like my partner and I talk about where I'm just like, okay, we need to get like toilet paper and, you know, cat food. Can you order that? And she's like, yes, because I know if you do it, we'll never get it. Our neighbors
might. Not with your Hext account.
It's a weird, it's like, it does feel like I somehow got cursed along the way, but yeah, like I've always.
Capitalism is getting its vengeance. Yeah.
That's fair. Like that makes me feel good actually. Like, yes, I have done enough to like piss off capitalism, like the weird amorphous blob of a concept that we all have hate on.
The floating cloud of capitalism is angry.
Good. Yeah. I don't know. I've always kind of like accumulated things rather than like ever like tried to like intentionally like decorate a space. Like I'm just looking at my desk right now, which I've had for a year, and most of the things that are here, I think I moved with that poster and that painting, and everything else I've just sort of like happened to accumulate in the meantime, like, you know, gifts or like my my wonderful partner got me the best gift ever, which is a pufferfish lamp with googly eyes on it. Like, and that is deeply my aesthetic.
The fact that that is your aesthetic and that there's someone who knows that about you is, I mean, that says something. There's depth there.
I put a ring on it. I'm putting a ring on it. Like, that's why.
There you go. There you go.
I think we had decided it before then.
You know, it's sort of...
But...
You mentioning, like, accumulating stuff and, like, the things just come to you. Have you ever read Amala Mothar's short story Pockets? Do you know that one?
Yes. Yes. I do know that one. Where somebody, I have that vivid image
a few years ago.
And, yeah, somebody, like, pulls a trombone out of her pocket, as I remember.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And, like, LeVar Burton, I think, did it recently on LeVar Burton Reads. There's a sense that, like, the object comes to you because there is some hole in the universe that it can plug, and maybe you're not the right person for it, but it's trying to find where it belongs, and it's gonna land somewhere. I don't know.
I love
this sounds
that.
Like apologia for hoarding, but yeah.
Well, it also, I mean, somebody was saying something to me about defect, which is like, you know, it looks at the kind of like. I don't remember. I'm sure I'm misquoting this person because I also don't remember who said it, but like it looks at the souls of objects. Like it treats objects as like, you know, I mean, in a very literal way, these are living beings. These are beings that have sentience and like value and worth, like even though they're also sort of, you know, created to be disposable. And like, I definitely feel that like, I don't consider myself like a very materialistic person. Like I've also moved across the country. 1, 2, 3, 4 or 5 times now, actually. In that process, like, I just, like, continually had to shed all of the stuff that I had accumulated and, like, make some really hard choices about, like, books was always a hard thing, but, like, I got used to just, like, going through my bookshelves and being like, I don't want to have to move, like, 100 pounds of books, so I'm gonna get rid of, like, at least half of these.
Yeah.
You know, I as you can say, I the books is the one thing I can't get rid of. That mm-hmm. like I can throw other stuff out. I can donate it. Books is the thing that I have the hardest time with. And
I
it's funny because
that. And it just like forcibly ripped away from me. Like when I had to, I moved out to the West Coast and then I left the West Coast for the East Coast again. Like. Mm-hmm. In that process, I was like, literally can't take it with me.
Yeah.
And I'm at the point now where I don't think I can ever leave this house. The reason is I'm pointing to my left, and the bookshelf immediately to my left is filled with ARCs.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about ARCs, like we get a lot of them. The thing about ARCs is you're not supposed to sell them, right? That's bad form. You don't sell them. It's difficult to recycle them
because
mm-hmm. you can't recycle them with the covers on because they won't take the covers. You have to take the cover off every single book because it's a glossy cover. They won't take it. I've already tried. Trust me. You can't donate them. No one wants them, right? So we have it as a patron level that you can actually, if you want an ARC, you can have an ARC. If you pay a certain level, you know, just pick the ARC you want, we'll send it to you. But other than that, I have all these books here, all these ARCs, uncorrected proofs and all kinds of stuff. I can't throw them out. I can't. And it's so hard to recycle. I'm stuck. I'm trapped. I am trapped and there's no wormhole out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just telling you that right now. This is worse than being
there are a lot of reasons why I miss that the school that I teach at is it's a doubly surreal situation for me to be a teacher right now because I'm still, you know, behind a computer screen talking to my students as opposed to in a classroom with them. But B, when circumstances are normal, my students live at school. It's a boarding school.
Oh.
So I'm like
they're
removed
X-Men.
From them.
That sounds correct.
it's like Hogwarts for hackers. But anyway, so they're supposed to be not just like in a classroom, but like literally living there. And one of the things that's helped me over the years, especially with books, has been that the students, because they live on campus and because they're not allowed to have cars on campus, they're sort of like stuck in this very limited zone where every now and again, one of their like resident counselors will take them on a trip to the local grocery store to like refill their personal fridges or things like that. But other than that, it's kind of like, hey, welcome to campus, you're stuck. And so they get very interested in things that they can have that bring something new into their life that also don't cost anything. Big thing, because they're all between like 15 and 18 and, you know, mostly broke. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons why the pandemic is causing more stuff to heap up around me is because a lot of the things I used to do to clear things out of my house are gone, by way of I would bring it to school and I would put a table outside my office and I put up a sign that says free garage sale. And I would put stuff there and it would be like, a brand of snack that I hopefully thought that my kids would eat and they wouldn't. And so, mm-hmm. like, I was like, shit, I was an idiot. I bought 4 boxes of this and they opened one and they hate it. So I bring the other 3 boxes and like, boom, they're gone. I'll bring books, like I'll go to the Nebula conference or World Fantasy or something. And I'll get a lot of books and I'll like keep the ones that I really want. And the other ones go on the free garage sale table. And so it like the giving away is easier for me under those circumstances because I get to literally see the people taking the objects and how ridiculously excited they are. Mm-hmm. Like just so over the top excited. Like they will grab their phone and text each other, be like, Townsend office now, free garage sale. And they'll just like show up. They'll be like, I got some tea and like, here's some, this candy isn't even expired. And they're like all sorts of like, it's just amazing. They're like, I don't know, like, oh my God, Ranma one half. Why are you giving away Ranma one half? I'm like, I already read it.
Like, it's been out for 25 years.
And be like, kind of hits a bit different now in the climate trans discussions, actually.
It sure does.
You're welcome to it. It does. It really does. I mean, I think there are it had its moments where I don't know, like the Thomases, I remember talking to Michael Damian Thomas and Lynn Thomas about this once, are fond of the term the suck fairy. Like things that you love, if you go back to later, you're sometimes like,
oh, yeah.
Because mm-hmm. the suck fairy came in the night and hit it with their little gnarly wand and sort of destroyed it somehow. And there was a little bit of suck fairy there, but, mm-hmm. but also a few things where I was like, you know what, that almost held up. Like that was mm-hmm. almost visionary.
Yeah. Like, almost. I mean, we can have like fun and complicated and sort of messy feelings about the things that we loved when we were teenagers. And looking back, we're just yeah. like, oh, that was actually really shitty. Like, mm. But it's still, you know, like I just introduced Nibs to the film Maximum Overdrive, Stephen King's mm-hmm. one and only attempt at yeah. directing a movie because he was just so coked up the entire time. He made a fucking mess. It's terrible. But it's also like one of my favorite shitty movies from when I was a teenager and I used to watch it all the time. Like, and I still have really fond feelings about it. And like, even though this, like there's, like, it was never not objectionable. It was always bad. And even the things that I liked about it were still things that are just, like, again, objectively not great. But it was really fun to just sort of, like, revisit these things and, like, especially to introduce somebody else to it who's just like, what the hell is going on? Why?
Right.
And I'm like, just go with it.
You can't get the same vibe. You can never rewatch it for the first time yourself, but you can watch someone watch it for the first time. And that is a spectacle, which mm-hmm. Patrick has heard me talk about this before, but being that I have a 9-year-old and a son who, his birthday is Star Wars Day. So he's turning 14 Ooh. Next week. So I have a 9-year-old and a 14-year-old. And, you know, the 14-year-old is like rapidly moving up with the power of the interwebs into like seeing all sorts of things and like broadening his sphere. But, you know, the 9-year-old still has a lot of geekdom that she's never encountered. And so part of the pandemic was the project of like, I am going to show my kids these things, not because I feel like they have to love them, but I'm just sort of curious, like, how is this going to land with them as a thing?
Oh, they have to love them.
Those are the rules, huh? Speaking of things we love, we probably have just enough time to finish off with picks of the week, right?
Ooh, smooth transition there, Townsend.
I'm telling you, 20 to 40 humans who want nothing to do with me, and I can make them right around this finger right here. It's not the finger you think, by the way. I don't know which finger I'm holding up, but it's not the one that you're assuming.
Yeah.
Maybe it should be.
All right, so picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Do I go? Am I the only one that gets to pick something? Or do you go?
We all go.
You all go? Okay. Why don't you all go first while I'm still deciding what my pick should be?
Okay. Tracy, sure. Do you want to go?
Sure. So I mentioned that Corwin's birthday, happy birthday, Corwin, is imminent. He's got a few people coming over today, like four friends. And mostly they're going to be outside because the weather's going to be really good and shoot each other with Nerf guns and like play video games on a TV we're putting outside and stuff. But they're also at some point going to play a card game. And my guess is they're going to play this card game because it's the one that has taken over Shea Townsend recently. It's called Trial by Trolley. And it's made by the same people who make the webcomic Cyanide and Happiness. So if that is a property you're familiar with and have seen before, this is very much the same aesthetic. Trial by Trolley is a party-themed sort of game where you have two different teams and one judge. The judge is the person who is the conductor of a trolley that, a la the trolley problem, must take either the North Track or the South Track, both of which have combination of beings on it that will be destroyed, killed, and utterly annihilated when the trolley plows into them. They can't choose not to pilot the trolley into one of these places. They have to. And so the other teams come up with a set of cards that they play on their tracks to represent who will be killed if you choose to strike us, and therefore why you should strike the other team. And what makes this interesting is there's three types of cards. There's what's called the innocent cards, which are people like, I don't know, your grandma, or a happy three-legged puppy, or you know, any number of sorts of things that you'll play there. And then there's what they call the guilty cards, and that might be like tiki-bearing white nationalists, or you know, and you, just different sorts of cards, or like velociraptors armed with heat-seeking missiles, or like you know, the politician who will start World War III, whatever the case may be. You get at least two of innocent people on their track and at least one guilty person. And then you get a modifier card. And the modifier card you can either play on your own track or on the opposing team's track. And it could be things like is secretly a serial killer if you want to nerf one of their good people. Or it could be something like has incurable cancer and doesn't know it. Or it could be something else like is secretly in love with you, or, you know, any number of sorts of things. So it creates, of course, this like big argument oriented, ridiculous, over the top, semi-morally grounded, but mostly grounded in nonsense kind of discourse. So if you're into the idea of philosophical problems and moral quandaries meets nonsense in a party game atmosphere, you should probably try out Trial by Trolley.
Sounds good.
That sounds really
sounds like
cool.
A fun game.
It's stupidly fun.
This isn't my pick, but I just finished my pledge thing for something on Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. I backed back last year the sequel to the Seventh Continent game.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a game called Seventh Citadel. And I just finished my pledge thing for that. They're not shipping until May of 2022, which is depressing. But my pick is actually a show from Netflix called The Irregulars.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen that. It dropped a little while ago. And the reason that it appealed to me is I've talked about it before. John Joseph Adams did an anthology a long time ago called The Improbable Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. And speaking of Stephen King, I think Stephen King had a story in that. Along with a bunch of other people. And it was all about, you know, putting Sherlock Holmes and Watson into horror stories, supernatural stories, steampunk stories, science fiction stories, like all these other kinds of things that you don't normally see Holmes and Watson in. That's kind of what The Irregulars reminds me of. It's about the kids, the Baker Street Irregulars, who were sort of used as a network by Holmes in the original novels. And in this case, there's supernatural things happening in London. And at least one of the kids is tuned into the supernatural stuff that's happening. Holmes is absent for most of it. And the kids are mainly dealing with Watson, who they don't trust. And it's just, I liked it. I thought it was a good show. They're dealing with all the supernatural stuff that's going on. There's like monsters and nightmares and magic and you know, it kind of plays on the whole thing about the at that time, you know, seances was really big, and people were into kind of this mysticism, and the difference is that, you know, in this particular reality, it's actually happening. Like, people are able to cast a spell and have something happen. And it's the kids that are, they're kind of on the ground, running around, trying to figure this stuff out, while at the same time trying to figure out, where is Sherlock Holmes? What happened to him? Do we trust Watson or not? And plus, you know, it's almost like a good CW show in the diversity of the cast and everything kind of going on in there. So I enjoyed it. It's on Netflix.
Cool. Nino, how about you?
Okay. So I think I have two. Am I allowed to have two?
Yep.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, cool. So the first thing that has been making me really happy this weekend is this new novel by Ellie Bangs. It's, I believe, her debut novel. It's called Unity.
We had Ellie on a couple weeks ago.
Amazing! That's so great. Yeah. So I'm just going to, like, add to whatever you all already talked about by saying that, like, this novel is so good. I love it so much. It's a post-apocalyptic novel with, it has two protagonists, the first of whom is a member of this sort of, like, collective identity. Like, you know, this is sort of, like, in the future, like, through technology, it allows people to basically share consciousness and, like, share their lifetimes to sort of, like, accumulate all of the different experiences, the different knowledge bases that they all have. But it follows this one woman who has been forcibly cut off from the rest of that collective for some number of years. I don't remember what exactly. And her attempts to basically reunite with them. And it's just so, it's like so well written. It's so amazing. It like gets really into the nitty gritty of just like, I mean, a lot of like post-apocalyptic, like sci-fi world building in ways that I thought were just really, really cool. But also like the relationships at the heart of it, and like the way that Danae, the protagonist, is sort of like navigating her own trauma. I thought it was just like really, really well done and really fascinating to read. And I really have loved reading it. My second recommendation is for this one series anime called Erased. Well, it's on Netflix under the title Erased. In Japanese, the title I think is something like The Town Without Me. And it's a time travel story, which is something that I fucking love time travel stories. And it stars this like 29-year-old like failed manga artist who's working as a pizza delivery boy. And he has this weird power where he senses something has gone wrong or is about to go really, really wrong and somebody's about to die or be harmed. And he's able, or he's not really able, he just sort of like is unwillingly flung back in time a few minutes to try to set things right, to avoid somebody being killed or, you know, murdered or kidnapped or any of these other things. And in the first episode, he starts remembering these things that happened when he was a child, where members of his school, like his classmates, were actually murdered. The crimes were never solved. But all of the adults were trying to like keep this a secret from the children, so they didn't know it was happening. And I don't want to spoil too much, but like he ends up getting flung back into his childhood with most of the memories of him as an adult. And he's trying to basically save one girl in particular, but like his friends as well. And also himself and his family. It's really, really well done. And it has like, it has the most cliffhangers of any show that I've ever seen. Like you start watching it, it's so hard to stop. And you'll just, it's short, luckily. I think it's only like 12, maybe 13 episodes. But it's really, really hard to stop once you get going.
All right. So if you're ready to give your life over to a show, you better check out Erased then.
Mm-hmm. That's, well, awesome. I also know a lot of people like, you know, they're like, I want to, you know, watch anime. Like, I want to try something, but like, I just don't know where to start. And, you know, somebody's going to go and recommend their fucking like Naruto, which has like 900 episodes. You like, most of them are nonsense. So this is great if you're like interested in anime, interested in the kind of like art of it, art form, and like want something that is, you can digest within like a day or two rather than like giving over your life for four months.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, we actually we had a couple episodes with folks who loved anime, and we posed that exact question because it is daunting, right? Mm-hmm. It's
some of them definitely.
It's a barrier. It's a barrier because you sit there and you look at it. Like I remember back in the day when Best Buy, you could still buy DVDs there, and they had a whole anime section. You had no clue what to do, what to buy, nothing. And I'm sorry, but bringing it online hasn't made it any easier. Mm-hmm. You know, still there's just tons of stuff. And then you always, to your point, you have that person who is so passionate about this one series that's been running for, you know, 67 years and has 10 billion characters. And they're like, this is the one you need to start with. And you're like, oh my God, I can't dedicate that much time.
That was my partner with Naruto, actually. Like, when we first got together, she sat me down, made me watch the first couple of episodes, and was like, you have to watch this. You have to understand where my nerdy ass came from. Like, because it was, like, one of those, like, foundational things for her. Like foundational geek text. And I looked it up, and I was like, there's over 400 episodes. I'm in grad school. I am not watching this. You are entirely wrong. And I did watch it because I love her. And then, like, it only took me, like, a few episodes until I was like, I'm just watching this for myself. Like, this is no longer a homework assignment. But yeah, it was a lot of just, like, me Googling which episodes I can skip and then, like, just watching them. Like, I'm like, all right, I'm finishing my homework. I'm tuning out with like 6 episodes of Naruto and of, you know, 4 glasses of wine.
The show that kind of got me into it can be controversial with people because it's Robotech, right? And Robotech is actually something that an American company took several different Japanese shows, chopped them up, and kind of blended them into this other thing, right? And so
are they trying to also sell toys? Is this like the Transformers?
The actual reason that they did it the way they did it was they didn't have enough episodes to make an American television season, so they couldn't get syndication without a certain number of episodes. This is the way it used to work. So they basically took 3 different shows and they made them one continuity inside of what they called Robotech. So it's Macross. Mm-hmm. And then I forget what the other 2 shows are, but they kind of took these together and they just kind of blended them because everything kind of sort of looked the same. The mechs were kind of the same. So they did it in such a way that they were able to make a coherent story that's Robotech. And for American kids, you know, that was a huge thing and loved it. But for people who were first, like, getting bootleg copies of Macross and Super Space Fortress, blah, 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 and all this kind of stuff. Like, those people are like, no, no, this is so much better. And there's 20 years worth of stuff or 30 years worth of stuff versus, you know, 90 episodes of Robotech.
Hmm.
But when I was looking for something new, the one that I liked that was kind of short was, I want to say it's called Moribundo, Guardian of the Spirit. And it's about this female warrior, and she carries a staff with her, and she ends up being responsible for this child who is like the emperor's child or something, and the emperor is trying to kill the child, and it's just like her protecting this child and taking him out into the wild. Wonderful show and very short, but still more than 3 episodes, which I think is Tracy's cutoff. She will only do 3 episodes because she doesn't want to get sucked into something.
You know, something else that we just watched last night is another new Netflix anime series called Yasuke.
I saw the trailer for that. That looked awesome.
It was like the first 5 minutes is this like long and extended battle scene that's like impeccably shot. Like, I was just thinking in my head, like, you know, I've seen so many MCU big battle sequences like this where I have literally no idea what's going on, who any of these people are, what, like, any of it. But like, I had no trouble navigating like through this long, like 5-minute battle scene that had giant robots and like also just mechs in general, smaller mechs. It had like fantastical magic as well, like, you know, with like people throwing up like force fields and like magical arrows and things like that. it had like a weird, like it had samurai, obviously. It had just like literally people just chopping each other apart with swords. But then also like some weird, I don't know, because we only watched the one episode, but like some like weird kind of like, it looked like necromantic flavored magic of like sucking the souls out of the dead and like imbuing them in living soldiers. It was wild. I was like, that first scene was just like all of this stuff. And I was like, ah, this is what I want. I just want all of this shit. It's completely bonkers. But I also, it all looks like it belongs to each other, like together.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So shout out for that.
That's too. On my list to watch. Yeah, that's definitely on my list to watch. So Tracy, do you want to talk for another hour?
You know, it sounds like we could, but I think we better show mercy both to you in editing and maybe to the listeners and to Nino for that matter, because, you know, that those novel edits and that wedding planning ain't going to do themselves.
That's a lie. I'm totally so just going to go to a park after this and hang out with a friend.
All right. So, okay, Nino, if people want to find you in the wide, wide world of like the internet, interwebs and whatnot, where should they go? What should they do?
Where could they go? So I don't necessarily recommend going on Twitter, but I am on Twitter probably more than I should be, at Nino Cipri, NinoCipri. I also have a website if you want links to my books, to the short fiction I've written and published, to essays or book reviews or anything like that. That's ninocipri.com. I'm also occasionally on Instagram, mostly posting pictures of my cat. And I'm not Nino Cipri on there. That name got stolen by another Nino Cipri. I'm at Wing Nuttery over there. But cat pictures. That's
awesome.
Yeah.
That's what Instagram's all about, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right, I think it's literally like...
Thanks so much for being with us.
Sorry.
It's the cat pictures. No, it's fine. This is the cat pictures.
No, I was just saying, it's like, all I post over there is like cat pictures, baked goods, and like my fingernails when I paint them. That's it.
Which look awesome, by the way. Every time you kind of flash them at me, I'm like, oh, wait, there's gold, there's blue, there's something else?
Nope, it's just gold and blue.
Ah,
whole
okay.
The whole package. All right, folks. Well, if you have not already read Finna, I think you should. And don't worry if you haven't had enough weird wormholery going on just from reading Finna. Defect, its sequel, is already out in the universe, possibly in the multiverse, too. Who even knows? Thanks so much, Nino.
Thank you both.
Okay, so this is awkward. Shadow the Cat was here listening and heard all the bumpers and the bumper about the D-O-G. To say he wasn't pleased is an understatement. I found cat puke in places no one wants to find cat puke. Seriously. It's gross. How the hell does such a small animal puke so much and all like in anger on cue? Totally going to play this one straight so I don't get in any more trouble, though. If you're looking for something to listen to now that this episode of the Functional Nerds is over, go check out Beyond the Trope. They're just as consistent as we are, putting out new episodes every week, and, you know, they do a great job, except for the whole... playdate thing we aren't going to talk about. It has never been set up, ever. And when you're done listening to their latest episode, jump over to patreon.com/functionalnerds and consider backing us. I may need to the cash to replace some things that have recently been puked in by an angry cat who holds grudges.